The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views of the show's host and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the management, owners, or staff of this radio station. And now, it came from the radio.
Toy and welcome once again to It Came From The Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I am here by myself in the MFC studios for this week's show. And on this week's show, we're going to have L-Man Danny Felty interviewing filmmaker Michael Deep Francis, Archie Comics writer and suburban fairy tales creator Francis Bonet, and I, me, Mark, discuss the film block of the indie movies we saw during the 29th annual Long Island International Film Expo. And L-Man Jenny Feldy interviews filmmaker Miriam Sakuti. But before we do any of that, we have to take it away with the non-news.
It's Morphin' Time!
The non-news is brought to you in part by the fine folks at sci-fi.radio. That is sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. As well as the fine folks at the Big Apple Con, which we are the official radio show of, celebrating over 26, 7, 8, 9 years of comicness and pop culture stuff. For more information, go to www.bigapplect.com. The next convention is scheduled all the way for the 21st of November. Tickets are not on sale right now. Also want to give out shout-outs for our Patreons, of which there are Danny Grillo, award-winning director Jared Perel, News Day Famous Dresden Media, Shadow Rabbit Art, Yasin Array, The Hurricane, Millie Portez, and GTS Comics. You want to have your own little shout-out, go to our website. It came from mail.com. The little button on there takes you right to our Patreon page. Also on the It Came From The Radio website is my book, Designated, a book about two warring alien races fighting over a newly discovered power source. The war finds its way to planet Earth, and as a result, some humans gain abilities. Issue 1 and Issue 2 is on sale right now, and it would be greatly appreciated if you would pick up a copy. So that is it for our non-news. We are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more. It came from the radio.
Hi, you've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at MFC_studios@hotmail.com.
Calling all comic fans, Hurricane, Long Island's only benefit comic art convention, returns in 2026. Join us May 9th and December 12th at Bethany Congregational Church, East Rockaway, New York. Grab toys and collectibles, dig through comic books, meet artists and writers, enter amazing raffles, enjoy food, fellowship, and rock your cosplay. Just a $5 donation gets you in from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. Visit Hurricane on Facebook, and on Instagram, it's Hurricane LI for details. Hurricane, where heroes unite for good.
My neural net processor is linked to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for my Wi-Fi. The more I listen, the more I learn.
Step into the fantastic world of cool kids comics and toys at 2055 Hempstead Turnpike, East Meadow, New York. Discover Comic-Con exclusives, the latest Funko Pops, and a treasure trove of new and vintage toys and comics. Whether you're a collector or a first-time visitor, we got something to spark your imagination over here. Visit Cool Kids Comics and Toys today. Let your adventure begin, huh?
Comic Books for Kids is the largest charity in the U.S. for comic books, toys, and pop culture items to children in hospitals and cancer centers. Donations of toys, books, action figures, Funko Pops, or anything pop culture related can be made to this organization. Find them at cb4k.org.
Now, back to our show.
You are listening to It Came From the Radio. This is Dr. Feldy. I'm here with a very special, very interesting man. He's doing some very, very, very entertaining work. So he's Michael Deep Francis, the actor, producer, production manager, location management, script department. Now, Jen met him at the screening of his proof of concept for Forensic Transport Savers. She told me all about him when I was doing some lip injections on a little lady. And let me tell you a little about this Forensic Transport Series, which I've been watching. It's all the proof of concept. Now, here it is. The series Forensic Transport follows the story of Bobby Faith, a former wealthy white-collar criminal who, after his career ends abruptly, he got in a little bit of trouble. He yes. takes a legitimate job as a forensic transporter. And the series explores his journey in a very entertaining way as he discovers the dead body business is much more lucrative than he ever could imagine. The trailer for the series can be found on YouTube, providing a glimpse into the intriguing plot and the character's transformation. Michael Deep Francis, welcome to Came From the Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And thanks for entertaining me. I've been really enjoying all the work of Natasha Landau and Vaughn and Glenn McBride. Now, let's get around to the first question now.
Yes.
When you think about the future of forensic transport,
yes.
Bigger vision. What's the vision?
The bigger vision, of course, like any other producer, you want to get into mainstream, either like Netflix, get it picked up maybe by Prime Video. But right now, I'm just looking for more exposure. You know, even if right now it's a web series. So right now, the bigger platform is that. But right now, I just want to really focus on getting it out there, marketing it more, giving more exposure to Forensic Transport. And eventually, hopefully, it could get picked up, maybe land on Netflix or Prime. But that's the main goal, really, just for everyone to see it.
Now, what about these vertical series? These vertical series, I would say even this week specifically, I've been working with someone who's producing all these verticals in California, and all these groups are popping up on Facebook producing verticals. Verticals are kind of taking over. Have you explored that? Are you thinking about doing that?
Well, actually, it's funny that you said that, because actually Forensic Transport is vertical. I don't lay it out that way, but it's the same as micro or vertical. It's the same thing, one or two clips for each episode. So I don't call it vertical. They call it micro. I think in Japan, I think they was doing a lot of the micro series. So vertical is just the way it's shot. When it's up and down, mine's not shot that way, but it's the same. It's the same, you know, same thing, you know, 1 to 2 minute clips for each episode.
You're doing like small horizontals.
Yeah,
you're not doing verticals.
Yeah, you're still horizontal. No, mine's is horizontal, but when you see it, it's in vertical.
All right.
I'm not going to change the sequence around. It's just too much.
All right. So since this is a micro series, horizontal in the vertical fashion, how much of the story have you mapped out so far?
Well, the story I mapped out, well, the actual Forensic Transport, this is not the actual script. This is something that I wrote. I took parts of it to make it a concept. What I actually written is about 2 seasons, 3 seasons. I've been working on this script for about, I say, 12 to 13 years. I've been working on this script. So, of course, I don't have the money to shoot everything. So what I did is I took parts of it, made this concept, so get people's interest. But it's a very, very large script. It's a very big project. As that I checked, it's about 124 characters.
Jennifer told me that you have about 1,000 pages written.
Yeah, it's more than 1,000 pages now. Yes, yes. And because the funny,
wow.
Yeah, because the funny thing, what I actually written, and I wrote some new stuff, new characters. While writing this concept, I actually like what I've written. So I actually took what I've written and I imposed it into my actual script now. And it just grows and grows and grows.
Now, well, I have a few questions about the cast here. What was the experience like working with your cast?
Oh, wow. The experience with the cast was actually amazing. Just to see my words come to life. I think the cast were fantastic. They listened to directions, but that was with the shout out to the director, Eric Richardson Hagens. But it's just amazing. The cast was amazing. We on set, it's a warm feeling. There's no stress on it. We let the characters actually not so much do improv, but we let them become the character. We don't hold actors to a certain line. We let them explore a little bit, but it was fantastic working with the cast. It was amazing cast, and I'm not just saying that. It was really an amazing cast, and it was good to shoot and just to talk and laugh. It was excellent.
A lot of talented actors in there, all different types of methods, all, and schools of work and processes there.
Yes, and because Forensic Transport is very diverse. We have a very diverse cast. We have black, white, Spanish. I think Bridget McCollum is the one that played Ukraine. She's from Ukraine. Oh my God, I can't even think. Not Alana, but
Natasha.
Yes, Natasha.
Right.
Yep, she's from Ukraine. So even with that, you know, just working with a very diverse cast was amazing. And everyone was on top of their game. You know, it was an amazing time.
It seemed like an old actor, and I would say, was definitely on point, very convincing. They're fun to watch. Really, there was nobody that stood out and said, wow, I really got to get rid of him, except Bobby Faith. Now, Bobby Faith as an actor was great, but when I saw him, I was just like, man, I want Natasha's character to beat him up.
Yes,
that'd be real fun.
Yes, he definitely took Bobby Faith to that level. Once we talked a lot about the character, and he really empowered that character. And a lot of people don't like Bobby Faith, but that's what it's all about. For all these actors to take these roles and become the people that are actually written, and 100% they nailed it. They nailed each character. They nailed it, and I'm so happy and proud of them.
I think it was Natasha. I forget. It might have been Natasha. Maybe it was Caitlin. And they were telling me that Bobby's actually such a nice guy, and it was so funny to act with him because he was so mean on set. But as soon as the camera broke, he's actually not like that guy at all. He's actually a sweetheart.
Yes. Vinny is actually a great guy. He's a hard worker. He works hard on set. But yeah, off cam, he's dynamite. We had some good laughs, but when it says action, he gets into that role.
Love it. I hope to play a villain one day. That would be a dream come true. Maybe like some crazy doctor or something. Now, whenever you film anything, even write a novel, but especially filming, I would say any type of film set, I treat a lot of actresses in the doctor's office. And there's all types of challenges, from a sleazy director to maybe you lose a location, or maybe it rains and the camera shut down. So were there any expected or unexpected challenges while producing this series, and maybe some people could learn from?
I didn't have a lot of challenges. I think production wise, there was a lot of challenges as far as my concern, because I didn't have a big crew. We didn't have money for a big crew. So it was hands on with me for everything. But as far as doing the props, lighting, it was just myself and Eric. We did have a sound guy a couple of times. But no, I was fortunate. I really was fortunate. There really was not any surprises, especially with the actors. Everybody was on time. They came ready. They knew their lines. That's why I said I was very fortunate, you know, with the cast. So no unfortunate things. I just would say, if you're filming and you don't have a budget, a big budget, you have to be very, very patient. And not only that, you have to be very, very organized. And I think the cast, even though I didn't have a big budget, but they appreciate that I was organized. When you came on set, whatever, I was organized. You know what I mean? We was on time. We knew what we was doing. It was no playing around. No, I'm not saying playing around, but it was straight business when the camera went on. But other than that, there was no other surprises. Not at all.
Now, I'm invested in the storyline. I like Bowen's character. I hope he doesn't die. I like Glenn's character. I hope he doesn't die. Caitlin, I'd love to see her back. Maybe she can come back from the grave. You know, she was a lot of fun. And Natasha, Dale. Bobby's role, what can we expect to see from Bobby? Can you give us any spoilers?
Well, if you're talking concept, pretty much You'll see Bobby. You'll see the other side, really the bad side of him, as far as he'll do anything to make a dollar. He'll do anything to get back his life that he once had, because before that he was the man. You know, he had the big house, the sports cars, and the actual script. I mean, it's so much, but I just think with Bobby Faith, you're just going to see how meticulous, how evil he can be, and he, by any way necessary, he will make money. I mean, I'll give away one thing. Like in the actual script of Forensic Transport, he actually meet these gang members, and he actually gets paid for taking the bodies and burning them up at the morgue, at the medical examiner's office, for $5,000 a pop. There's a lot of things in Forensic Transport that Bobby does to make money, you know. And just to clarify, Forensic Transport is that my job, their job is actually they pick up the dead and they transport them back to the office. That's what they do. That's a Forensic Transporter. They pick up the dead for a living. Mm-hmm. And that's what I actually did for a living for 20 years.
That's what I was just going to ask you. Now, are there any parts of this that actually happened to you, things that you observed? Can you give us some secrets?
There's certain cases that you go on that's weird, that I probably took ideas from it and it spent it around. But no, not so much. I just knew it was something different, because a lot of this series is based on homicidal detectives, but no one actually wrote something about the actual people that pick up the dead, not the cleaners, because I think they have one that does the cleaning of crime scenes. This is specifically workers that pick up the dead. But as far as my job, there's certain cases that I picked up that was interesting. Oh, I kind of twist them around in certain parts of the script, but not too much, you know, because what I'm doing is I'm taking a character, I'm taking my job and making it bad, like very bad, like stealing money from the dead. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, a main storyline, though, Bobby basically loses all his money, and he has a wife, Caitlin, who's quite a piece of work, a head case over there, and they lost all their money. Is there anyone that you know in your life? I know I've witnessed people. I actually know a family that the movie Boiler Room was based off of, that family, and I got to see them lose their money and lose the big house. Now, do you know people personally that lived this life of luxury and then they lost it all, and that's what inspired the character?
No, I don't know anyone that had like that much money and then lost everything. I think my imagination is just very big. I've witnessed you know, a lot of rich people that still never was happy, that ended their life. You know, I've seen that, you know, you know, working on the job. But as far as people having big money and then losing everything, no. I just say my imagination is very big.
Well, if you ever need some help, I know at least two families that I grew up with. I'm not going to name the names, but one of them was close friends with me. And I was told that their fathers were the real life characters that Boiler Room the movie was based on, and they went from mansions and cars and, you know, really good looking people too, and then they're still good looking, but they moved to a apartment complex, which I might have lived in, same apartment complex growing up. So I got to see, you know, some rich people lose it all and what happened to them, and you know, they're walking around with their tail between their legs and a little embarrassed, you know. So anyway, you know, the whole now we're entering a different time, I think people value things a little differently. Back maybe 20, 30 years ago, that money and that glitz and the glamour, I think, held a little more power than it does now.
Oh yes, a lot more power. I think you're absolutely right. But you mean you still, but you still see some movies, you know, people had it all and they lose it. I mean, you see things on TV about it all the time, how you get rich and then people lose everything. And then they're trying to make a comeback, and either that's using crime or whatever way they can get back to their original being rich again. So, you know, but that's basically though, I think I just got the idea. Again, it was just something that I explored with the script. I have a vivid, crazy imagination with all these different characters. Again, like, you know, Veronica Transfer is very, it's a very large script. It's so different from the actual concept. I mean, original script, I have a dance studio, I have a martial arts studio. One of the guys, the whole thing with the dance club thing, and you have the gangs with it, and everything crosses over. You have the police. It's a very large script. I would say that it's a mix of, actually, it really is a mix of, I would say, Breaking Bad and Ozark, you know.
Now, you're very ambitious, and even just the idea of writing 1,000 pages is a lot, and you have to have a lot of self-belief. So did you grow up with parents that taught you to believe in yourself, or where did you get this self-belief that you could make this happen? Because you have to have the belief before you get started.
Yeah, well, I grew up without my father. I never knew my father, but I think my mother just instilled it in me at early age. But I think when I was even younger, I always had these thoughts in my head when I was younger. And I used to fantasize or have these stories in my head. And then when I did my first play in high school, I knew that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. But I think it was always instilled in me, the emotional part of it, watching movies, you know, easily crying on movies. So I was very, you know, not as far as writing, but as far as acting. So I think it was always just instilled in me at a young age. And my belief as far as, you know, that I can make it, that's just religious, you know, God, you know, you know, praying, you know what I'm saying? And right now I'm like my wife and my son. You know, that's my strength, you know, you say. Mm-hmm. So the belief is just it's just instilled in here.
I got some interesting prayer stories. Any interesting prayer stories you feel comfortable sharing? Maybe you prayed for something and then you got it?
I've always prayed, you know what I mean? And I put it like this. When it does come to me, I'm just thankful. I think that's the biggest part with me. I'm thankful. I don't take anything for granted. So when I'm writing or something, I'm just thankful for everything. I'm glad to be alive. You know what I'm saying? You know, I was, you know, I'll tell you, I don't mind telling you, I was diagnosed with cancer 2014. So especially after diagnosed with cancer and going through that, and I went through COVID, and I was on my deathbed for 14 days, almost died from that. So all these experiences now, now I'm just thankful. I'm just thankful. Even like that, I'm so thankful when I even was be able to shoot Forensic Transport. And if it happens, it happens. You know what I mean? And I just keep working hard, but I don't stress over stuff at all because it's not worth it to me. But I enjoy it, but... You know, I just do what I have to do. I'm thankful. If someone wants to come along and help me out or help with money, I'm thankful. And pretty much that's where I'm at.
I can definitely, you're great vibes, great to be around. When I went to this Forensic Transport screen, I was like, I really like the vibes of this. Because when you go to different film festivals or film screens, a lot of people, you know, it's okay to take your work seriously. Nothing wrong with that. And as, you know, you should take pride in your work, sure, I guess. Or maybe pride is a seven deadly sin. But the vibe at your screening was definitely more fun. I think more appreciation, more thankfulness. Whereas a lot of other ones, they might have this, they take themselves maybe too seriously, maybe a little bit more or snobbery, or maybe I'm noticing a lack of appreciation. But I definitely felt appreciation with you. And my last question, we're just about to go over time. We got 2
minutes
left. Oh, thank
you. I'm sorry. I was running my mouth.
My last final question is, you work with your wife on this. So, you know, is it difficult to work with the wife and then go home? You're getting fights, or how's that work?
Not at all. My wife and I have been working together as far as the entertainment for a long time. My wife is a book author. She wrote like 12 books. I've been doing from doing mascots with her to doing book readings. She had a dance studio for like 12 years. So my wife and I always have been doing something in the performing arts. I mean, we did a play together. I mean, that's how we met. We met doing Ain't Misbehaving. So no, we love to talk about it. We have dinner, we talk about projects, but never no arguments over performance or anything. No, not at all. Not at all. Never.
That's a beautiful thing to be able to create things, you know, and people, some people that believe in God, it might say that, you know, creating things is actually part of your mission or God's work. You know, you can create children, you can create plays, you can create movies. Yes. So, you know, you and your wife together are definitely a power team and power couple. And I just like to say, you know, good wishes to you on your health and on transport and everything.
Thank you
that
so
I do,
much.
Your great vibes. And yeah, just I can't wait to see more of your work. And please tell listeners and viewers where to find you, website, socials.
Well, you can find me at Michael D. Francis, all on social media. You can hashtag Forensic Transport Series, and once you hit that, you'll find all the you find all my stuff. And every Sunday, I'm releasing a clip every Sunday until it's done. You know, if I shoot any more, we'll see.
Sunday, check it out. It's definitely not boring. Showed it to a bunch of people. They were floored. I had one woman, she was a little drunk on New Year's, and she was just saying, "Wow, that's so good, so good, so good, so good, so good." You know those wine old ladies. So on
I love
that note,
them.
Please excuse the hair. I actually had breast implants done a couple of weeks ago, so I couldn't see my hairdresser. So that's the reason for my crazy hair look. And I'm just trying. Yeah, you know, if you see say a little bit here, you know, we're not going to show too much. You know, this is a PG show. All right. Anyway, about that, thank you for listening to A Caper of the Radio. We're going to throw it back to Mark Soares in the studio.
Hi, I'm Olivia Youngers from Star Trek Picard, and you're listening to It Came from the Radio.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. I am here at the 29th Annual Long Island International Film Festival, and I am here with Archie Comics writer and Suburban Fairy Tales creator, Francis Bonet.
That's me, I'm here.
So Francis decided to join me in a review of our little block of films, which is the horror sci-fi film, and I'm looking through the paper right now. So what do you expect to see at this film festival, Francis?
I'm hoping to see something good.
Just something good? So let's see, we are block 19, and here it is. So there's.
I'm hoping to get blown away.
So there are shorts, and then there's a feature film. So there's going to be The Closet, Paralysis, The Visitor, Echoes in the Dark, Hide, Emergence, and in parentheses it says Nigeria, so I'm guessing it's a Nigerian movie, I would assume. And then it says The Airways, which is our co-host Elle Mangini Foley's film that she's starring in. So we're actually going to try and check that out. So out of these movies, just by title alone, what do you think you're in for? What do you want to see the most?
Just looking at this, Paralysis sounds interesting. So yeah, I'm going to go with Paralysis. It's also a short movie. 6 minutes, 11 seconds.
Are you going to actually time this 11 seconds?
I've got my stopwatch. It's right here on me.
All right, so hopefully we're going to have some really good stuff. This is independent films at our finest. We love independent filmmakers. And hopefully this will be a really good thing to see. So what we're going to do is, like I mentioned, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to watch all of them, and then we'll give our reviews afterwards. Do you have anything to add before we take our break?
Support independent films.
All right, so with that, we're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with more. It Came From the Radio.
Looking to upgrade your outdoor space? Rare Products NY has you covered. Our universal pergolas are modern, durable aluminum structures designed to withstand the elements while adding style and value. Enjoy all weather protection with adjustable louvers and glass options. Stay cozy in the winter with modernized screens and enclosures. Create a luxury ambiance with built-in LED lighting. And give your home or business a modern look that keeps guests coming back. For your on-site evaluation, call 516-225-8271. Email rareproductsny@gmail.com or visit rareproductsny.com. Rare Products NY, we've got you covered.
Now, back to our show.
And welcome back to It Came From the Radio, the official show of the Big Apple Con. This is your host, Mark Torres, speaking. At the Long Island, at the 29th Annual Long Island International Film Festival, I am here with Archie Comics writer and Suburban Fairy Tales creator, Francis Bonet.
Here I am.
And as I was just alluding to the magic of radio, we have finished watching all the shows, all the little shorts and films at the block, and I wrote down notes. So we saw The Hide, Closet, Visitor, Echoes. So we saw the whole thing. So why don't we just go down the list. What did you think of the films?
I thought every single film had something different. I had some that I liked more than others. But overall, they were all interesting concepts. They were all enjoyable.
Okay. I have seen a lot of independent films, and I have seen a lot of bad independent films, and I have seen bad independent films made by people
who are good filmmakers and the intentions and the behind the scenes of the stuff that make you can appreciate the film, how they're being made, but not the actual product of itself. And this was a problem that I had with a couple of things that I saw today. As I'm writing down notes and I'm like, I don't really like this. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? But then after they had the Q&A, you listen to what they say, I'm like, oh, okay, I understand what they're talking about. I see what they mean. I understand. So I'm just going to mention a couple things here. So as I had, so I saw the Hide. Hide was a very short film.
Was that like 7 minutes?
That was, so it's actually funny because I was expecting the films to be shown in the order that was listed on my little piece of paper.
Yeah, but they
weren't. So right there, I was like, well, this isn't 3 minutes long. And I thought it was supposed to be 3 minutes long. It was not 3 minutes long. It was called Hide. It's my favorite one. I just had one question I wish the filmmakers were here to ask, but I thought it was very well acted.
Very well
shot. The story was pretty clear. I understood what was going on for the most part. It had a little bit of mystery to it.
It leaves it up to the audience interpretation of...
Right.
So, without spoiling it.
But. So what did you think of Hide?
Hide was one of the top movies that I did watch tonight. I'll say that it was very, very well acted, very well shot, and the girl, I forget her name, who was in it, she did a fantastic job in that movie.
As child actors go,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, she wasn't like 2 years, she looks like 12, 13, but she did a great job.
So, moving on, we saw the little short was called The Closet, and initially, I was not a fan of The Closet, but it had a good twist at the end, and that won me over.
Yeah.
So I thought, I was like, oh, that was pretty different, that was different, I was unexpected, and I really enjoyed that part.
I'm going to say that was one of my favorites, and the reason why was because it made me laugh without spoiling it. And it, again, it was only like 3 or 4 minutes, but the ending, you know, and you heard the whole audience was laughing at the end.
Yes. Then we saw The Visitor, and I wrote my notes here. I wrote, what the hell? So I'm watching The Visitor. It was about an actress with an AI component, which I thought was very interesting, that a lot of them films had a lot of AI things, and I wasn't expecting that. I wasn't expecting that independent filmmakers now would incorporate AI so much, because it is a hot topic. So I was surprised how on the button it is for independent filmmakers.
I'm gonna say for that movie, it at the beginning it really had, like, I was really interested in where it was going, but as I got like halfway through and towards the end, it kind of lost me a little bit. So I'm not saying it's a bad film, but it's probably, of the ones I saw tonight, the weakest one.
And then we saw Echoes in the Dark. So I wrote down two notes for Echoes in the Park. I wrote down, who took the picture? So there was a part in there where I'm following the movie, I'm with it. There's a part where the guy proposes, and then the girl has a flashback. Or flash forward, I'm not really sure about the time frame, but they had a picture of that moment where he proposed to her, and I'm like, who took that picture? And that just stuck out of my mind, that if you're going to have a picture in a frame of something that happened, it should be, where did the guy take the picture? It was just a nitpick for me, but that really bothered me a little bit. What did you think about the movie?
Maybe it needs to be re-edited a little bit.
What did you think as in total? Like, it was, I got lost. In that film, I got lost. Like, what's going on? The narrative was very difficult for me to follow.
It seemed like they were jumping around. I don't know if it was different time periods, you know, with this relationship. It was a little difficult to follow. It visually, it was interesting, but it was hard to follow.
And then we saw The Airways, which was my co-host Elma, Jenny Feldy, in the film, and we just had an interview with her, which will be airing at a later date and time. What are your thoughts on that one?
It's not because Jen was in it, but I did think that that was probably one of my favorite movies because of the concept. And I said this to Jen after the movie. I just like, I don't want to spoil it, but I like the concept of the caller who called into the show. I didn't know, you know, there was a twist, I guess it was halfway through.
Right.
And I didn't expect that to be the twist until like maybe a minute before.
The problem I had with that film, and I gotta tell you, I've seen a lot of Jen's films, And this one, by far, was the best one. She was the lead. She had a huge part in it. Usually, the things I've seen her in, she has a big part. She dies like 2 minutes later, and I got to see the rest of her crappy movie. Sorry, Jen. Sorry, people made Jen films. But this one, I was like, wow, I was invested and interested. But it broke one of the cardinal rules for me, which was show, don't tell. I mean, yes, it's an independent film, so I understand that there's budgets and there's limitations, but I felt that this was a very heavy-handed story, and it could have benefited with more
mystery,
as opposed to a lot of just dialogue explaining things.
You make a good point. You make a good point. There was a lot of dialogue in the movie, you know. So, you're right. If they cut back a little bit, and the runtime was, like, 47 minutes.
Yeah.
They initially said that it was going to be a 10-minute film, and it went to 47 minutes. I think somewhere in between would have probably made the film even better.
Or, like I said, if they would have shown more. Like, if they would have shown all the... I mean, the premise of the movie is that she's a radio show host, and she gets an unusual call. Maybe they could have shown a little bit more flashbacks. Maybe they could have had a little more behind the character developments of what's going on. But for them to just do a lot of just sitting there and just saying, oh, this happened, and then this happened, and then that happened, that bothered me a lot. And I felt that they could have done better. That's the thing. Like, this one's like, I could see that they had potential.
Well, they'll fix it in the sequel.
Yes, they will fix it in the sequel. And finally, there was a film called Emergence. And that movie was in the future, about AI, once again, and AI taking over, which, like I said, was I was surprised about that. Once again, as I was saying earlier, that they had the behind the scenes, they had an interview with the after the film. The guy spoke a lot about the film, and he's a dancer. And there was a lot of dancing in the film. And it reminded me of this other film I had seen. Charlie and I had seen this film years ago. And it was like this weird, crazy... We don't even know what it was. We saw this movie, and Charlie was like, this is not a good movie. And then we heard the Q&A, and the guy's like, I'm a DJ. And the DJ scene in the movie was the best part of the scene, because that's what he knew.
Yeah.
And also, this was the guy's first movie. So once again, I can understand what he did, and I thought that it had a good message. It was very interesting, I felt. But the problem I had is I got lost along the way. There was a lot of time cuts that they had with time stamps, and I'm trying in my head, like, is this before, is this after? That was a difficult part with me, but I thought overall it was a good idea, and as a first movie, it's pretty well done.
Yeah, the whole AI thing, and we've talked about AI and my feelings on AI before, it's scary because, you know, it takes place, you know, a little bit in the future, but I could totally see this becoming reality. Like, I don't know about, you know, was it 2035, I think it takes place, is that right?
2035,
yeah. So I don't know if, you know, in 9 years that this is going to be reality, but I could definitely see it in maybe 20 or 30 years. And if you like dancing, there's a lot of good dancing in this movie.
It's really good dancing.
Really good.
And I think that could have been a completely different movie as a dance movie. But to incorporate that into a science fiction with a lot of dancing, I can see, like, maybe you needed to cut back a little bit. But once again,
that's what he knows, too. Right. You know, he knows dance. That was probably the best part of the movie.
Yes, and that's the thing. Like, you know, as they always say, film what you know, do what you know. And he did know it, and it did do very well. I just felt that tonally it could have been a little less, and things could have been
more balanced. Yeah. It kind of threw the balance off a little bit.
Yes.
Dancing.
So,
but it was enjoyable.
Yes, it was. So, we saw a couple of films. What was your favorite? What was your least favorite?
Oh, I forget the name of it again, but the one we talked about with the girl.
So that was Hyde.
Hyde was one of my favorites. My least favorite was the one where I lost track of what was going on.
The
girl
with the
echoes. That's the one that was probably my least favorite.
So, for me, I say the Hyde was my favorite. And it's weird because, as I was saying, because I was expecting a 3-minute short, and it was the first thing, I was like,
"You were surprised." It was a surprise.
Yeah, it's like, this is way longer than 3 minutes. But it kept me invested, so at no point I was like, oh, I hope it keeps on going. I hope they messed it up. I hope this is one of the features. So it actually was pretty darn good. For the lease, it was a tough one. I had a problem a lot with the echoes in the dark.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it was going to be good, and then
I
got lost.
Right. It started out, like, but, interesting, and then halfway through the movie, they just lost me.
But for me, I would say the Visitor was probably the weakest of the films, because it started with 2 seconds of like, okay, I think I know what's going on, and then it just went way off the rails and it never made it back, because there's like multiple versions of the character. I was like, I don't know what's going on here. Then there's the pictures that are being taken and the phone calls. Like, none of it is making any type of cohesive narrative whatsoever. And then it just ends abruptly. I'm like, I don't know what I just saw.
But visually, it has that going for it. Visually, it was interesting.
Yes, Thanos Snap was the Echoes in the Dark. The Visitor was the one with the girl with the blonde who was going for the role, and they were saying it's about AI, and then they had the so that I was like, I don't know, and it did feel, which was weird, that they did use AI in that movie, and they're talking about her accepting AI. I couldn't even understand the message.
It was a little hard to follow.
Yeah. So, final thought?
You know, I had a good time. You know, I don't really come to, indie film festivals very often. This is one of my first ones, so I was surprised. You know, I usually avoid them because I'm like, there's going to be a lot of bad movies here. But today I was like, okay, this is something different.
So, as I said many times, I've done 100 of these things, and this by far was not even close to the worst of batch of film festival. You did. We picked a good one to go to. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. Once again, I want to thank the guys who run the film festival. It was a really good place, and we're looking forward for the 30th. It'll be next year. So with that, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more. It Came From the Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Todd McFarlane of the record-setting Spawn comic series. And if you're looking for any kind of cool conversation about creators, about entertainment, about all that good stuff, you go to It Came From the Radio. You're listening to the right spot.
Now, back to our show.
You are listening to It Came From the Radio, and I'm here with Miriam Sakruhi. She made an incredible 8.5-minute documentary story of crushing loss and the need for connection in a digitally isolating world, which is how it's listed in the press release. And we're going to talk about it, and we'll see. Is this world really crushing us? Do we need more connection? I say yes. So Miriam, welcome to the show. Thank you for sharing your work with us. And well, first of all, I would just ask, could you just sum up for the listeners, what exactly is this about so they can picture it while listening?
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for having me. Mon Taxi is, I would say it in a very summarized way, is about continuing the conversation with my father. So it's a short documentary where I call my dad, which used to be my ritual. I would call him all the time. Call my dad and just tell him, you know, what's happening.
Right. So so here's my perspective. So I watched this in the sauna last night. I'm from New York, and New York has changed a bit. I was born in 84. I used to go in the city in the 90s, and in early 90s, late 80s, it was very relaxing. Now it's a lot crazier. So what I saw, from what I remember in my sauna haze, was mostly 8.5 minutes. I'd say most of it was B-roll shots, landscape shots of New York City. And then it's phone calls to your father, because she would start the day calling her father whenever she was going on an outing. From the time she left until she got to the place, she would talk to her dad. But then her dad passed away, and that's basically what this documentary is. It's phone calls, and she's saying, hi, hello, this is what I'm doing. But we never hear the dad respond because he died. So I would say, now, with that in mind, what do you think your dad would say about this film?
About the film? I think he would probably be proud that I've shared the story. My dad used to tell me, we spent a lot of time, Dad and I, kind of arguing about me staying in the U.S. versus me coming back to Morocco. And for a long time, those phone calls would, at some point, he would bring it up. And I would tell him, I finally convinced him, saying, Dad, I think that I'm going to, I feel freer here, and I feel like I'm going to have more impact, or I can still have impact from the U.S., like about Morocco and about, you know, the reef, which is the indigenous area he's from. I think he would feel very proud that I put that on screen, and that I shared kind of like not only our relationship, but also our culture and like the indigenous part of his identity in this film?
So what we see most of this is, I would say, mostly B-roll shots, right? And then we have subtitles basically going along with it. So, you know, I've produced some films and acted in films, and it is such a pain learning the dialogue as an actor, or getting your actors to learn the dialogue, and you got to shoot things, and it could take forever. I mean, one film took 3 years just because dialogue and getting everyone in the same place. But when you have all these shots, and then you have the subtitles, things go a lot faster. You don't have to worry about lines and actors. So how long did it take to actually make, from start to finish, storyboard writing, post-production, coloring, all of that, this whole film?
Yes, you're absolutely right about the way you set up the question. I think that my film isn't done in a conventional way, in terms of I didn't really plan it. It started with me wanting to call my dad and forgetting that he had passed, and being like, oh shoot, you know what, let me just like record a voice note instead, and starting to do that for a year and a half. I still do that, but the time for my film was around a year and a half. And then having this huge repertoire of all the voice notes and kind of like working backwards from that, like getting all of them, listening to them, seeing the ones that actually, you know, the sound was good enough to be on a film, because I tried to re-record them once I decided to, you know, to share the film. But it just kind of like lost the layer of authenticity that the original raw ones were, even though, like, even when I transcribed it and repeated the same thing, but like with a mic, it just did not sound the same. So I decided, okay, you know what? I'm only using the original voicemails I recorded while I was walking and talking to him. So it was like going through that, selecting, doing a short list, transcribing all of them, and then see what makes sense with the footage I had shot, because I also was doing the same thing. I was shooting footage that actually meant something to me in my relationship with my dad. So when it's in New York, my dad had cancer and he came to live with me and was his caregiver for almost 2 years. So we would walk, we loved walking. So we would walk a lot of times, and I would go back and like shoot B-roll on the places we walked, in the corner where, like, you know, we were telling each other a story. So a lot of the footage actually also meant something to me. And other footage was actually things I wanted to share with him, which I also used to do. I used to take photos and like share them on WhatsApp. So then it was not very conventional, because I had all this footage and all this audio, and then it was like sitting down and like pairing them up rather than starting with a storyboard. So to answer your question, in total, it was about a year and a half.
A year and a half. So coincidentally or not, I was thinking a lot about a lot of these subjects raised. You know, my mom has leukemia, my dad has issues from having cancer, and you know, it's a lot of, I guess, pre-grieving or worry. And I was listening to a lot of NDEs, or near-death experience, and they talk about path of life, the meaning of life, and some of these people even claim to get messages from the beyond. So I know this is a similar question, but let's just say, you know, he's out here watching your work and maybe even watching this interview. Is there anything you think he would say or has said about this film or life in general? Just anything that maybe, you know, second thoughts or views on life from the beyond.
Well, first of all, I'm sorry to hear. That really sucks. And I hope they'll be okay, but also sending you a lot of strength. Yeah, of course. And then, so my dad was a great listener as well. I think anything we'll say, it would be, I think it would be very supportive. And a lot of people, when they meet me, they tell me that I give away a lot of confidence. I think that came from him, because when I was little, he kind of like was, I have two siblings. Him and my mom would raise us, telling us that, you know, we can achieve whatever we want to achieve eventually. So I think it would go along that way. It was also, we are a very, like, our love language is a lot of physical touch, like a lot of North African families. So more than talking, it would be a lot of like patting me in the back, giving me a hug or something like that. About the film.
Interesting. So I think about this a lot. I ask this question a lot for anyone who listens to my interviews, but I still want to know from everybody, you know, making a film takes a lot of time. It can include a lot of isolation. There's a lot of planning. You know, I had two short films that took over like a year and a half of my life recently. So one, what makes it worth it? And then two, what are some sacrifices that you have to make? Because there's 24 hours in a day, so you can't do everything. What are some things that you've had to put aside to do this film or films in general?
Yeah, well, congrats on your two shorts. I'd love to see them. I think sometimes, a lot of times actually, not sometimes, I would be like, oh, I wish there were more than 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
I was like that actually since I was a kid. I actually remember telling my dad that, oh my God, like I wish there was 36 hours in a day because I don't feel like I have enough hours. I still feel that way. Yeah, I still feel that way. For me, to be honest, like it depends on the film. For this film, it was, again, it wasn't conventional because I feel like I needed this film. Like it actually, it's been really healing for me to make it. And when I was making it, I didn't intend for it to be a film that I was going to share with people at first. And only when I had already had a draft cut of the film, is when I decided that I'm going to share it. And it was prompted by someone I met at a film festival last year and insisted when I told them what I'm working on. I was like, but this is very personal. I'm not sharing this. They we had a really good conversation and they insisted that that's the kind of work people want to see and like people might relate to it. In hindsight, like I'm really happy to have shared it. And to answer the part where you say like, what makes it worth it? Like being in the room and seeing it play with the audience and see how the audience was reacting to the film and like feeling that energy in the room and just receiving all the either people coming to me afterwards to talk to me in person or receiving messages later or DMs tell me that, you know, they really related or they would like share their stories or what they're going through. Really made it, you know, made it worth it because I was feeling very nervous about sharing such a vulnerable film with the world, but also with my family. Like, I always was like very quote unquote like not showing emotions with my close family, which is very ironic because I'm such an emotional person. But like, I never cried in front of them, and here's my film. Here's my film telling like everyone like today I feel like I can't breathe. So it felt like I really felt emotionally naked, but it was worth it once, you know, I saw how much people related to it. It was just like, okay, this is a no-brainer. This was the right call.
Yeah, what I found then, it's funny that there are a lot of things you mentioned in the film that I was thinking about the last few days, which happens a lot. My co-host knows this. It's very weird. It's like faded. But I was thinking a lot of my more comedic or things I used to post, it was things that made me laugh and it was interesting to me. And that's why I posted it. But in the last few years, I've been doing things on a much more professional level. And I'm just doing things because it's professional or it's the job. But there's really not much of a passion. And the energy behind it is just totally different. So, you know, for you, you know, if sometimes if you do things that are really just for you, you're really getting something out of it. It sounds kind of woo-woo, but maybe that's more meaningful than just these storyboards and the professional. And, you know, it maybe things are coming from the heart and that means something more than just, you know, putting something together to, you know, put it flashy film festivals and optics. And I guess my last question, if we have time for it, now, you made this really more for you, but while you're editing, I'm sure at that point you knew you were going to show people the film. So what did you hope that people would feel from it? Or what type of emotions or feelings were you trying to conjure up in the audience?
I was, more than hoping, like, I didn't really go with it with expectations, but I wanted to show a kind of like the stages of what grief can look like. And I wanted for the film to not be just about the lowest points, because I feel like sometimes grief can be so absurd and can make things extra funny. And I, it was really important to me to also find those moments in, you know, in my audios that I had sent to my dad and include those in the film as well. Because a lot of times throughout one day, actually, not even a year, the day can feel like a roller coaster. I could say the day, like I could start the day laughing about a stupid thing. And then in the middle of the day, like I see something that reminds me of something and I get so emotional and like cry, or, and then it gets again funny. And like, it's a kind of a roller coaster. So I wanted, when I started working as well with my composer, and even my colorist, the colors that we chose and the sounds we chose complemented that roller coaster in terms of, am I feeling too emotional? Am I feeling detached? Am I feel, is it kind of neutral and you can hear the surroundings? So it was that, it was just going through the roller coaster and picking up, you know, voicemails that reflect that.
All right, we're closing out the interview. So if you'd like to give our audience your socials, where to find the film, I know it's going to be at the Tribeca Film Festival in Holly Shorts doing the film festival circuit. So I guess just give our audience whatever you want us to know about you or find you on social media or in the world.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll be posting all our screenings on Montaxi's Instagram, which is just Montaxi Film. That's the easiest way of finding me and the film. Yeah, and reach out if there's anything.
All right, awesome. Well, I hope you listen. You enjoyed listening to my tongue-tied interview. And now back to Mark Torres for more It Came From the Radio.
Thank you.
Prithi Pata, if you had any honor, you would listen to sci-fi.radio, the sci-fi for your Wi-Fi. Kapla!
Now, back to our show.
So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here any week on this radio station. If you miss any part of the show,
tough,
go to our newly revised website, www.itcamefromradio.com. The archives will be up in a week or so. Check us out on such places as btd.radio, sci-fi.radio. Check us out on our places such as Facebook, Instagram, YouTube page, Twitter.
And always follow the cost-benefit ratio. If the benefits outweigh the costs, do it. If the costs outweigh the benefits, don't do it. Or
just Google It Came From the Radio.
And we'll see you next week.
You've been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views of the show's hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect that of the management, owners, or staff of the station. We now return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.